And you gonna murder this one and murder that one. Talking all that bullshit. I'm gonna put it to you like this, yo.
This is for the nerds. This is for the brainiacs. This is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back. You ain't gonna touch me. You're not gonna do nothing. You are not above me. I bet you wish you was me. I know that I know.
What is poppin', everybody, and welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but it's not limited to, my boy Tortue!
Woo! I can't believe Berkey didn't delay the... I can't believe you didn't delay the...
What the fuck, Tortua?
What was that? That was like the weirdest intro.
Bro was trying to get a thought out, and
yeah, I mean, this is what
believe,
he does,
I
man.
I can't believe Berkey didn't.
I know.
And then he just like stroked out.
Because he was like, "What the happened? Fuck?
He didn't do his job.
He interrupted me in the middle of my thought.
That was just like, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah,
the man but anyways,
what I was gonna say is, I can't believe Berkey didn't delay the podcast for 15 minutes so we can watch the end of this Bucko game.
I mean, I'm going to watch the end of the Bucko game.
So
here.
So am I.
And that's own, why I cut him off.
Why? What?
Talk about the Bucko game.
Have you partaken?
There we go.
Okay, let's not like, get demonetized. We don't make much here. I need our 27.
Restart the show. This is just a smidge.
This is the wash. Conrad, have you been a part of your conversations on this pod before? Because you're not exactly out here slinging the fire these days.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I know what I'm talking about. How about the other day mid-convo when you go, CSA!
I'll probably do that again today.
I have a belly button.
Listen, this is Conrad's thing. Today. Right.
And I'm going to do it at the right time.
Commit to the bit.
Honestly, if you do it, if you start doing it at the right time.
Oh, no, I'll do it at the right time every time.
Maybe for you, sir. Maybe for you. How's everybody doing? You made it, Melissa. I mean, you kind of got caught in 4K. We delayed the start 5 minutes waiting for you. And because of that, the countdown camera caught you walking up the stairs.
Okay.
You know, it's good.
She shows up exactly when she needs to.
That's true.
Yeah, otherwise I'd be watching you guys watch the Bucko game.
Right. I like that you called it the Bucko game. You're catching on to the lingo.
I don't know which team it actually is. It's the Buccaneers or
the... Honestly, I appreciate nothing more than the fact that LaManna was engaged enough in this conversation to not recognize the Brewers just hit a go-ahead home run.
Shout out to Eric Comp in the chat. He writes, shout out Rob Young for making Berkey the new face of the Midwest poker scene.
Listen. He only partially retired me, and that was many, many, many years ago. I'm able to stay in action, but yeah, I'll be in the Midwest.
So it's not going great.
Maybe I'm headed to Milwaukee next week. Maybe I'm going to be grinding those 2-5 streets in Pottawatomie. See, nailed it. If you guys would like to join me and my brethren from above the felt, Jamin Burton, Jamie Kerstetter, and Uncle Tom. Can I call him Uncle Tom? I feel like that. I feel like I can't call him Uncle Tom. I feel like Jamin can call him Uncle Tom.
Why don't call Jamin Uncle Tom.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So we've gotten it out of the way. We'll all be there. The meetup game is May 2nd. I believe it starts at noon. This is going to be for the grand opening of the Pottawatomie Poker Room. I believe we're going to be there doing things May 2nd and May 3rd. I think their sports book is also opening one of those days, but I haven't gotten the full details as to when. So looking forward to seeing all you guys if you're in the Milwaukee area. I think I might try to catch a Brewers game while I'm there, but sadly they're not playing the Pirates, which would have been a real nice...
couldn't get lucky twice. I mean, we got lucky that we were in Miami when the Pirates were there.
That was pretty wild.
Yeah.
Just get to see basically opening weekend.
Mm-hmm. That was real good games.
Yeah, you looked like you had a fucking blast, buddy.
No mid-game away. Nap.
Slept for 4 innings in the middle of the game.
Ain't nothing wrong with a little mid-game nap, you know? It's nice and cool out there. It's nice.
I just
who doesn't love napping in a sports stadium?
You know, maybe you guys. Let me talk to used to first. And then you know, we can come back to Conrad on this because he can give me some perspective as to how to make it all go away. I wake up these days and I think to myself, "What are you doing, man? What are you doing? You've put your time in. You've made your money. You don't need to go to work ever again. Why are you setting an alarm? Why are you showing up and doing a podcast? Like, what is the point of it all? Why are we here? You know, real existential crisis.
You're having a midlife crisis?
Not a midlife. No,
I feel like you've been like this your whole life.
Yeah, this has been going on.
He's beyond midlife.
This has been going on for quite some time.
I think this is just like a run of the mill for you. How do you... Everything's going as
what
normal.
I'm basically asking is, how do you get your ass out of bed every day? Because I don't see the point anymore.
I don't. That's why I'm late.
Right. Okay, that's
you
fair.
You know, it's just, you know, like, doesn't it feel nice when you walk outside in the morning and that sun hits your face?
I mean, usually
good,
I just get
it?
Hungry.
Yeah, or that thirsty. Too. It's like, oh, like, you know.
No.
Maybe get a workout in, sweat.
The first thing I do is go to the gym.
Eat, which is nice.
I'll walk you through my first hour of the day. If this doesn't speak to the chaos that I ensue upon myself, I don't know what does. I have to be at the gym by 9 at the absolute latest,
right,
if I want to get my workout in,
right,
because it closes at 10.
Okay.
So that will give me a 1 hour.
And you have a podcast workout to do.
And I have a podcast to do at noon.
Yeah.
But on top of that, a 1 hour workout is like really, really hustling.
It's
so
not, yeah, 1 hour is.
I'm either cutting the workout or I'm really like pushing
not
myself.
Warming up.
Yeah, or I'm like pushing myself to the brink of you know, throwing up a little
that's
bit.
That's what I
I'm
do
super
every
setting
day.
Everything. Right.
You 1 hour it. Workouts, but yeah. It's nonstop, baby.
You get it. So
but it's working.
So ideally I could use like 1 hour 20.
Yeah.
But so what I do every day, set my alarm, 7:45,
yep,
7:53, 8:01,
yeah,
8:16.
Oh, you're one of these people?
8:23. Now, if I make it all the way to 8:23, I'm committed to being there at 9 o'clock sharp. Like, yeah, there's no shot I'm giving myself. Like, that 37 minutes is only going to be utilized to wake up. And I got to tell you, most days it's the 8:23.
Yeah.
So I have 37 minutes to lay in bed and wipe the sleepies out of my eye before I go to the gym. And I got to tell you, by the time I get to the gym, I look like this. I look like Pip.
Mm. Well, you know what? Do you... You obviously take pre-workout, right?
Oh, yeah. I sip it while I'm warming up. You know, okay. Huberman, I need the...
That's what I'm saying.
The 40,
right.
40 minutes prior
to... You got to wake up at... See, I wake up at 7.
Uh-huh.
That way I have my coffee at 8.
Right.
And then I'm ready to go by 9.
Okay.
8:30.
Hey, yeah. Brian.
You know, so I'm doing like some emails. I'm doing some, you know, Solve for Y stuff while I'm sipping my
and
coffee.
And you're so
that's
happy.
A functional
yeah.
guy.
Right.
He's so happy.
Right.
Look how
and
happy.
Then, you know
he's
what?
So
I'm not, you know, crashing at like... 2 o'clock.
Look to your right, Brian. O'clock. Hurry up.
Why?
O'Neal Cruz has hit a double.
He did.
there's a home run.
There's Conrad's CSA.
Yeah.
I can't. I mean, I've tried to get up at 7. Mm-hmm. I'm very tired.
Yeah,
I'm very
early.
Tired at 7. At 8:23.
You
guys are
so
cute. You need to be in bed by 10, like me.
Bro, I was asleep by 11:45 last night.
Actually, I didn't go to bed till 1 last night.
Wow.
Big night.
You fuck it.
Oh my god.
Oh man. Farm and some airdrop points.
same.
You guys are so cute.
Yeah, tell us how you do it, Conrad.
Setting alarms uh-huh. and stuff like that to get up. You guys need
oh, I
all
don't
that?
Set an alarm.
Oh yeah.
Michelle okay. sets an alarm.
I mean, just
Conrad's about to flex like he sleeps in, but it's the exact opposite. He's so filled with angst, he's up at like 4:45 every
like
morning.
3.
Yeah.
I'm up at 4:43 actually.
For no reason.
Every right. single morning, I think it is.
He's like, "Oh, I've been working all day." It's like, what do you do between then and now?
I go to sleep at like 1 a.m. Wake up at 4:43.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm right. You know how we give it.
But then what do you do between then and now?
So his pre-workout is he wakes up and, you know, he needs to wait an hour to get the caffeine per Huberman protocols.
What?
Well, yeah, per Huberman protocols.
He doesn't follow Huberman
protocols. No, of course he doesn't. Look at this, man. This is Huber Daddy right here.
Huber Daddy.
Okay.
Are you kidding me?
So prior to the pre-workout, he has to have the pre-workout, and that's usually about a fifth of bourbon.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
It's usually like...
A little nip.
A Celsius.
That's Celsius. Caffeine. He doesn't follow the fucking protocol.
I told you.
Protocol. God damn it.
Celsius.
I thought you were Huber Daddy.
I don't follow the protocol.
I don't know.
I mean,
your
some days
is.
I do by accident, I guess.
I do with the caffeine. I have a hard time. See, the thing is, I only have 37 minutes.
Yeah.
And the choice between going out and standing in the sun for 15 of it versus laying under the covers and having Pip bite my nose, I choose the latter pretty much always.
You keep your room pretty cold?
So cold. 62.
See, now that's what I'm saying. So, like,
62?
Hard to get up when it's that cold.
It's very hard.
It is, but now, this time of year, when you go outside, the sun, it's warm. The sun's warm. Ooh. And you just, you know, it feels good.
It right? does.
If
I will
like
say.
If it's like January, it's cold as fuck outside.
When I'm on it, yeah. I get up at 7 and I go from my 62 degree room to cold plunge to a sauna.
No. Wait.
And that's that's nice.
Your fucking thermostat goes down to 62?
Yeah. It goes down to 59.
I feel like half the nights that ours is off and I'm like sleeping in 80 degree heat.
I feel like you should do something about that.
I share a thermostat with Corey.
But I will say I appreciate you not doing something about it since I include the bills with your rent. So yeah,
our side is 67.
I thought about it last night. I walked in my room.
I gotta make sure it's on every night.
I walked in my room like 8 p.m. and it was literally like walking into a meat locker. I was like, I could probably turn this off during the day.
Yeah, that's cold.
I can't believe really. 62, and I'm pretty sure ours doesn't go down past 65.
I might never get out of bed if it was that cold.
Yeah, it's hard.
When I'm sweating, I'm like, get me out of here.
Right. For a while, during the winter, you can just turn it off and it'll drop to 62 because it's cold outside. So I would set my my thermostat has a program on it. So I would just set it to be off all night long and then turn the heat on at 7 a.m.
Oh.
That was working really well.
Yeah, that's good. Because then you start heating
up.
It smoked
me out. Oh, it smoked me out. 72 at 7 a.m. I'm just like, get me the fuck out of this heat box.
See? Mm-hmm. There you
can't
go.
Do it.
That's
but
actually a good idea. Maybe you could get like a little timed space heater that just like blows hot air
straight
on
your face.
Yeah. So time to get
like,
up, fucker.
Oh, this is awful.
I'm melting. yeah, that actually might be a good idea. It's harder now that the AC has to be on because it's warm out. But I guess what I could do is just set it to turn off at 7 a.m. and then just, you know, let that sun creep in. Really. I've also had moments where Pip is very good. She's, I would say, 90% potty trained. She lets herself out the doggy door. She's really great. But every now and again, she'll slink herself off the bed in the middle of the night. And I'll wake up and she'll have shit inside.
Oh,
like, she just won't like let herself out, right?
You gotta go, you know?
So I realized this about her. And the thing is, if I wake up, when she does it, I can guide her out the doggy door and she obliges, no problem. So like last night it happened, I don't know, probably like 4 o'clock in the morning. I could feel her body like worming off the bed and I just sit up like a corpse. And I'm like, Pip, what are you doing?
It's like, the Undertaker.
I'm just gonna quietly shit.
Yeah. The worst part is, you know where she does it? Is on my couch.
Oh, no.
On the couch?
Yeah. She climbs up there.
That's so much more effort than it's going outside.
I know. And it's legitimately right where Gatsby like likes to sleep if he's not my bed.
Oh, it's on purpose.
I think it's on purpose too.
She's like, I'm taking the throne now.
Right. Yeah. Just poor guy.
He's
man.
Like, whatever.
Poor guy. New came over to play yesterday. She did really well with him.
That's good.
They're still both puppy status. So like,
Newt's still puppy.
Well. I mean, he's like under two.
He's two and a half.
He's two and a half. Okay, he's under three. No, he's full grown, obviously, but he still has puppy energy.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
He's a teenager,
right? Yeah.
They were running and playing. It was so cute.
Yeah. You can't get the old puppy.
She always tries to play with the old guys.
They just bark.
Yeah. They're like, "What are you doing?
Rip!
Leave me alone."
He's like, "Okay, never mind.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it." So there's a little bit of buzz, now that we're a month out from this final table with Landon, Jesse Lonis, and the like of the WPT. A few tweets came out today. First one was Lonis asking if he can get extra tickets or if there's a limit to how many people can come. Looks like we're going to have competition for the rails. He's got Frank the Tank, and I don't know the Drunk Tortoise can compete with Drunk Frank the Tank.
Oh well,
it's gonna be a
goddamn
try
too. He might have cuz.
The rail is gonna be off the rails. Let me tell you,
that's gonna be fun.
It's gonna be a real standoff. And Kessler was basically complaining that he can't believe they scheduled this during the actual WSOP.
Why he's like. He's not going to be there. Why does he care?
I mean, the only friend's account replied to him and said, does this mean you won't be joining us on the rail?
What event is it competing with?
Good question. So
gotta be like the first one, right?
Yeah, is it like
the I would guess the 5K?
It's the 5K. It's the 5K.
Oh.
5K or it might
does
be
it start
oh, yeah.
earlier this year? I thought it was like
I knew there was one event that I would miss for the because of the academy.
For the academy?
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm gonna have to like Landon better make it far because I gotta like, you know, get there after the academy.
So. Yeah. Okay, so the 5K is on the 28th, but obviously they still have to miss that because right. they can't play that bag and then fuck off Lined the next off. Day. Yeah. They'll be missing, I mean, this is a big one.
Is it the five? It's like the 500.
It's the $500 kickoff event.
That's
freeze
the
out.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm pissed about.
Yeah,
it's have like
brutal.
20 starting days.
No, one starting day.
No way. It's
$500 yeah. freeze out.
It's a freeze out.
It's only a 2-day event.
Wow.
Really, really fuck. I mean, this is.
I like the ones that are, you know, unlimited re-entry, 5 starting flights.
Oh, I hate those.
$500. It's
right.
$10 million to first.
Yep.
Like, that's yeah. what I'm
that's what
I'm
we're
there
here for. Absolutely.
If we're going to do it, you know, let's do
absolutely.
It big.
Let's get after it. Yeah. Honestly, I think for everybody at that final table, missing the 5K will be disappointing. This is not. I mean, whatever.
I mean, they don't care. You're playing for yeah. You're playing for 800,000. Like, oh no, I'm gonna miss a 5K. Right. There's not gonna be another 5K right around the corner.
Hey, this is a no limit hold'em champions reunion freeze out, buddy.
Oh, I take it all back.
Okay, there are bounties where you can win a main event seat.
There are.
They might get me in
like,
this motherfucker.
I'm in.
Put that on schedule.
Oh man. Wait, what happened? Did you? Oh, never mind. It's just Borg. For whatever reason, his volume is really low.
Is
everybody
this the
else-
same person we got from yesterday?
Yes.
Okay.
Everybody else's volume is completely normal.
Who?
So Borg is a part of our Discord chat. He's mm-hmm. very active. Yep. Great yeah. guy. He's a part of... I see him on Twitter all the time. He's in the chat. And he's been saying, like, for the last week, the volume on all of his devices are low. And I can't tell if he's gaslighting or if he's actually just going deaf. Because dozens of other people have confirmed that the volume's totally fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know what
it
to tell him.
It might be his hearing.
I think it's
my devices, I promise.
I think it's time to go get those ears checked, man.
Yeah.
Maybe get them cleaned. I'm not sure. So, I think Landon is...
Is Family Tice coming down for this? Griffin, Dalton?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. Where are they...
I got to take Griffin bar hopping. We got places to go. People
you
two, to see.
You two would be a real fucking treat together, bar hopping.
It's going to be fun.
You could take you. You should take him to Old Vegas. That's the spot.
Oh, yeah. No. I know where I'm taking him.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Would this be adjacent to
yes.
the Eldorado?
Yes. Just say yes. Would this be adjacent to yes?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. It's going to be very adjacent to everything that you could possibly throw. and then finally, Becker took the opportunity of Landon making the final table to get a little bit of action down mm-hmm. on himself. He said, if anybody would like to get on WPT final tableist Landon Tice's at Even Money versus me this summer, slide in. And it looks like he's getting all the action he can handle. Fedor took some. He said, I'll bet on Tice optimally versus you. Becker said, you got me. How can I turn down a chance to collect from a legend like yourself? Probably seen every TV final table you played. Same bet as Pads.
Glazing.
just kidding. No crossbook or anything. Just whoever wins this the bet at the end is 10K good. So it looks like that one got confirmed. Pads got in there as well. He said, if it's against you specifically, not Negreanu taking it, who's trying to bury us like he says, I'll happily take it. Becker says, yes, it's for me. 10 to 20K, even money. Pads book 20K there. Did anybody else get in this thread?
Fedor.
Chew's
yeah,
in
I said
there.
Fedor first. Who?
Look at random Chew trying to get some action.
What's he in there for? I didn't see it.
I will take more of this if you're interested.
J-Mo's in there.
Yeah, 500K. Everyone is like, optimally versus you, not versus D-Negs. J-Mo's like, just get a loan from D-Negs.
I don't know anybody who is a stranger individual with his internet personality than J-Mo.
I actually love him.
He's honestly, it's
what's there to love?
He's an asshole to everybody, but
it's pretty run-of-the-mill for crypto people, though.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. It's just funny that he took, like, he spends so much time shitposting in threads that are just like, like, no.
Get a loan from Uncle T-Nex.
Like, he spends time shitposting in threads that, like, nobody with any amount of reasonable respect for their time would ever post in. And then, like, comes out of the woodwork and just totally contradicts. Like, he spent so much time shitting on me for booking bets on Landon at whatever price people would offer. Uh-huh. He's like, oh, this guy's just so poor. He's out here farming and, like, he's just poor. He's so poor. And then out of the blue, he's just like, I'll take 500K on Landon. You know, it's like, okay, well, we all just know what a sharp side is.
He just always, you know, he just sees a spot.
So did I.
Yeah, okay. But you got to be able to change your mind.
He talks his shit. But, you know, he saw a spot, he's ready for it.
He's an idiot. Just because he's on the right side of this one doesn't make him less of a freaking idiot. Oh, man. John Lee, I don't know who this fucking guy is. I'll bet my boy Nick Palma beats both of y'all during this series.
Someone should take that.
All right, buddy. You got your fucking action. Nick Palma versus the world. I can't breathe, man. I just
how
can't
lucky
breathe.
Though? Well, not lucky, but we're good for getting our odds early, huh?
I mean,
I knew it would happen.
Yeah, of course. I wish we could have got more.
Yeah,
obviously. Yeah. I mean, hey, book's still fucking open at this point. If anybody wants to slide on in there, I got to finalize a couple. Vanessa and I are finalized. We agreed pretty much on the same terms as Daniel. And I agreed on, I think there were a couple caveats her and I had. But yeah, our caveat with her and I is just mutually played. So it's not every event.
Oh, wait. So that's interesting because how do you know which ones are mutually played?
I imagine these guys are going to post results throughout. But what?
All right, so I mean, you're relying that they post results on each event, like saying that they bust this or bust that.
Well, I'm not relying on anything. At the end of the summer, they'll have a full report. It'll just take some accounting.
Oh, yeah.
But I also assume for the sweat's sake that they're going to be updating daily.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's just like a mutually shared spreadsheet or something like the media is going to, you know, they don't owe anything to fucking anybody, but the media is going to want daily updates. We're gonna want daily updates.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, it's a fun thing to follow. It becomes a lot less fun if everybody's just like doing it covertly.
The people want to know if you're doing your 1-3 crossbook.
If anybody wants to crossbook me playing small
maybe
stakes,
J-Mo
yes.
Will.
Yeah, maybe J-Mo will. Idiot.
So rude.
This is how you get the crossbook down.
I know, you're pretty good at that.
Fucking idiot. There's an opportunity for me to play a lot more small stakes, but I definitely need to figure out a way to crossbook. I just, I don't know how to get that kind of action down, and I don't know why anybody would want to take it, but hey, maybe there's somebody out there.
If you piss someone off enough, it will happen.
Maybe Uncle D-Negs.
Maybe Uncle D-Negs.
Maybe we can just fucking break this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just fully break him. Although I will say he might be onto something about folding nines on an A-side board in 1-3. Might just have to fucking give that one up regardless of what the solver says.
Yeah.
You bet one big blind. All right, I check fold. We're out of here.
And then you're dead.
Wait, what did she say? Just turn a nine.
And you're still dead.
Stop. You guys. Not you guys. Sorry, I don't mean to lump you in, Melissa.
Yeah, I'm not in there.
Yeah, my apologies. You're a reasonable one.
Thank
but
you.
Like the general populace makes these small stakes game out to be something that they just are not.
I know. I agree.
That was a joke.
Everyone always has it. They really don't, though. Like,
yeah, that was obviously
the reason why everybody always has it is because no one's willing to fucking bet.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
People if you would just bet more, they wouldn't fucking have it. They'd fold.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like if their goal is to have it, then just make them fucking fold a bunch. Let's let's all move on with this. Maybe Sid will crossbook me. Is he out there in the chat? Shout out to Sid.
Sid's always here.
Sid's a loyalist that says I'm spreading the worst small stakes advice on the world. I could never beat 1-3.
Oh, maybe he'll give you the action then.
Yeah, he said he's going to be the first one sitting to my left whenever it finally happens. I can't wait. I'm going to break his ass.
He's like, I'm going to take $400 from you.
Good luck. Oh, man. Honestly, what a dream. Maybe this is what I need, because I'm in quite the fucking downswing. So maybe I just need, like,
drop,
you know.
Drop down a few stakes.
Just a couple of
stakes. Just drop down a couple hundredth of the stakes.
I just get to spend a couple hundred hours being the whale. Like, what? Mm-hmm. That's the fucking dream. That's what we all live for. You know,
the whale never wins. Well, not never. But.
Well, but everybody's so nice to them, so you kind of win. In a different way.
Yeah, yeah, that is true.
You know, everyone's nice to be like, catered "Let to. Me get you mm-hmm. something."
Right?
Yeah.
can I offer you a massage?
Yeah. You always have a seat.
Yeah.
Well.
You'll always have a seat. You'll never have to be like, "Oh, I don't have a seat.
I don't have a seat today."
They'll build the game around you.
That's
true. VIP treatment. Mm-hmm.
That is true.
Yeah.
Just go there and open seat. Open sit.
They're like, oh, let's bring in some players for you.
Let's. I want to talk about this a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about downswinging in general. Now, I know no one in this room has ever gone through one, so this might be a bit foreign.
I have no idea. What it's like,
but I currently am on. I'm tied for my biggest downswing in the 100-100 game, and it's the third time it's happened in the last year. So I'm on a 300K downer. Not that concerned.
That is a downer.
Not that concerned. It's not that much.
Two backyards.
Yeah, it is two backyards. But it's not...
Three if we build it.
It's definitely not... You guys got more expensive. Yeah. Should be about six.
Supply and demand, baby.
It's not that much. I mean, whatever.
It's three buy-ins, isn't it?
Well...
Yeah, it's three buy-ins. It's 3,000 big blinds. Yeah, it's three buy-ins.
I'm being serious, though. I mean, it's like three buy-ins.
What do you usually
right?
buy
well,
for?
When he stuck balls, cover. It's three buy-ins.
So like 100K?
Yeah, whatever. Like, I just cover. Sometimes it's 100. Sometimes it has to be more. Sometimes it's way, way, way less.
But like average around.
Yeah, it just depends if Oaken's playing or not.
Okay. Yeah.
It becomes a dick measuring contest of who can empty their box. I sit with 100.
That
he sits with 120.
That gives me so much anxiety.
Why?
The brought box box on table. Oh my god,
I pitched this after the summer last year, like once all the action calmed down and we were back to like playing, you know, our kind of regular game, regular stakes, and everything just felt so small. I was like, we're all miserable, we're all downswinging, let's just all of us empty our box and flip for it.
Yeah,
winner
for
takes all.
Boxes.
I was like, winner takes all. One person will be very happy with a bustling new poker career. The other four of us will all be retired and also be extremely happy. What more could you ask for?
True.
I think this is like the biggest win-win of all. And you know, we can even do like a little equity chop. You know, we all flip for it, but everybody gets 10% of the winner.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think it's a win-win. You know?
Well, sort of. One way to put it.
Well, spare me of this misery. Yeah, this is like nowhere near my biggest downswing, big blind wise or other. But it's the consistency of the losses that are really, I guess, racking up.
When will it end?
It does feel that way a little bit, right? Like I had a seat this morning at 10. I was just like, I can't fucking do it.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's no way I can put myself through a 10-hour day knowing that, like, the starting lineup is going to be, on average, 6K deep. You know, it's like, what?
That's
you
want crazy.
Me, yeah, you want me to play disciplined 60 big blind poker when I'm on a 300K downswing?
And
the downswing's actually bigger because I got wrecked on the boat. So it's like, I'm losing
three. Who didn't get wrecked on the boat, by the way, besides like three people?
There's only seven of us.
Everyone I talked to, like,
in
just
general.
On the boat. Like, yeah. I feel like just got wrecked.
I mean, that is kind of.
Except Guapo.
I won $500. Yeah. I mean, I'll take that.
I had a good trip.
Those destination poker trips, the truth of the matter is, like, most people are going to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true of poker in general,
I know,
right?
By the end, everyone's like miserable.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Well, it is kind of funny because, like, if it's just a poker trip, I think people obviously still become miserable.
Yeah.
But it was part of the expectation. When it's a vacation trip on top of it, you let it ruin the vacation
part.
Oh,
yeah.
Which makes no goddamn sense. Yeah. It should be the opposite. The vacation should lighten the burden of the fact that you're getting whacked. But no, it just doubles it down. It's like, oh God.
That's just for you. You're
maybe
a
you should try. Maybe you should try a rally cap.
What is this?
I, you know,
can you explain rally cap to Melissa?
Yeah, rally caps. It's what the Pirates are trying to execute right now, down 7-5 with two outs.
Yeah.
You know, you throw your hat on in a different way than forward. There's many, many different ways: inside out, sideways.
Just to kind of change the juju.
Okay. Sam and I were playing slots on the cruise, and he turned my hat backwards, and I was going to put it forward.
That's exactly it.
And I think he did say rally cap.
There you go.
So
yeah,
that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He went for the rally cap.
Did it work?
No.
No. Usually, it rarely does. Yeah. And then when it works, you're like, see?
Exactly.
I know.
Exactly. I'm very surprised by you, Guapo. That was a very PG version of what I thought you were going to come with. I thought you were going to hit me with, I should try a slump buster.
I know what this is.
That one almost needed an explanation.
I know what that was.
That one wasn't going to get an explanation.
Well, guys, I don't know what it is.
That's actually a pretty good segue into the that flight I want to take here pretty soon.
Oh, yes, that's true.
We'll discuss that at another time.
Yeah, Guapo's going to get on the sex plane.
Oh, my God. That thing probably stinks. Imagine the smell in there.
Are you going to spring for the 90 minutes?
That would be a while.
Why would you do that
in a list of like 84 minutes?
Hey, 6 minutes is not so bad.
The ad said something to the effect of average love time is 8 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait,
they're in there timing you? How embarrassing.
But like, don't worry, the views are very scenic and you can enjoy some champagne.
What is
this? You should have seen this plane.
It's a sex plane.
It's a sex plane in Vegas.
It's so ridiculous.
The pilot has a curtain.
It's
anywhere noise canceling headphones.
It almost looks like a shower curtain in between, like the pilot.
Oh my God!
And this like
the cockpit.
Like, this little mattress that they've thrown in the back of this plane. It's pretty gross.
I don't want to like go in where someone like a bunch of people I don't know have been having sex in a small area. Like that sounds fucking gross. There's no way they can clean it properly.
Have you never stayed in a hotel before?
I know, but that I just don't think about. I don't think about that because not everyone's having sex. Some people are sleeping.
Yeah.
Hotels are pretty nasty too.
I know.
But
hotels
are
disgusting.
Conrad brings a sleeping bag whenever he goes to a
hotel. He goes and buys new sheets every time he sleeps in a hotel.
The dedicated area to just fornicating is it's a little much.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's
wow.
It's a little much.
It's too much in my head.
It does kind of look, it's very plush.
Yeah.
I think it's like 7 feet by 4 feet. It's.
Ew, look at the picture of the people kissing in the window. Fucking gross. The hell?
I mean, if the plane's going down, it'd be a good way to die. So
it is a small plane.
I don't know.
You also have to just join the Mile High Club, right?
That's the point.
I once saw a guy getting jerked off on the airplane.
That's definitely like a felony.
I turned around. Like, what the fuck?
Damn.
That's
you know, Nikki always says like we do a poor job of getting to the main topic fast enough. This is why. Like even when you do, it fucking tangents off into Conrad watching a guy get a handy.
Just turned around.
You're saying that has nothing to do with your downswing?
I mean, we're talking about slump busters here.
Right,
that's true. Oh, that's right, slump busters.
How do you bust out of a downswing?
Tell us how you bust, Burke.
Yeah, how clap do you bust?
You clap some cheeks in the sex plane, I guess.
That could be a slump buster. I mean, people probably have a lot of different ways they do it.
How much was it for 30 minutes?
$800.
I want to say it was like $600 or $700.
It's a big discount for the 30-minute ride.
Let's buy a plane and do this. Like that's a huge amount of money for just 30 minutes.
Yeah, but like, you know, it's not just 30 minutes.
There's fuel, insurance.
Yeah, time up, time down.
We don't have to actually fly it. We'll just say
Tammy can fly. She's a pilot.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
My assistant can fly
Tammy can fly it. We'll get Leon to be like the host.
I don't think it needs.
he's the flight attendant.
Yeah. Does
anybody need a tissue?
No, I don't think it needs a butler.
But he's like a VIP host, isn't he?
We can get Hugo to do the turndown service.
Yeah, Hugo could come and do the cleaning.
Do you think anybody has booked it solo and just went up there and jerked?
I hope not.
Oh, that would be so sad.
They're like, oh, she didn't show up. I guess I'll just take. I already paid. So.
I already paid for this.
Dinner for one.
She like cries and
I like that they said can host up to four people too. Like, if you want a menage, you know,
just in case.
Swingers. Yeah. Swingers probably love that.
Yeah,
love cloud.
Fast.
Did you guys see any swingers on the cruise? By the way.
I'm sure, but like nobody identified as one.
No, apparently they put upside down pineapple stickers on their doors.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And then what? Hope someone knocks.
Yeah. It's like
that reminds
signal.
Me. I gotta.
Oh, there's salami. I'm in.
Hold on. I gotta.
Holy shit! They have salami.
I had a random Bumble match.
Sorry, Michelle. I'll get to you in a second. I gotta attend to this charcuterie board.
She's like, oh, this is so romantic. You guys got I was promised salami.
She deleted it.
What? Someone messaged you something?
Somebody messaged me and said, hey, I'll be in town May 11th. My boyfriend and I would like you to watch or possibly participate. And I replied something to the effect of, like, no, thank you. And I got unmatched.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe the upside down pineapple is just the thing. Like,
I've had a friend do the, not the watching part, but he was the... The boyfriend was watching, and he was the bull.
I mean,
it.
That is...
well, they call it a bull.
He wasn't the cuck.
Right.
Yeah, he was...
Right. Yeah, I
And then they had... Because he was, like, a filmmaker, so they had him, like, do an artsy filming of it. And he was like... I was like, I don't want to see this. Like, this is very... Like, please don't
it's
show
like
us.
Black and white with
it's like cinematic.
Subtitles.
The guy's like in a cuck chair in the corner. It's just like, what is going on?
Yeah, this is a lot.
There's a cage involved.
This
like,
is a lot.
You know.
Yeah, a cage.
Yeah, like
for who?
Like a penis cage.
I'm sorry.
Jesus. What?
That's what they use. Like, it's like a cage that they wear on their penis. So we really tangent.
The guy watching.
Yeah.
Wears a cage.
He's not allowed to get a boner.
Oh my god, this is terrible. Who signs up for this
so
shit?
That, they might make you do that if you had agreed.
No, I was never agreeing. Like,
Bucky should have to wear the cage until he gets out of this.
Yeah, that's out of the slump. Until you get out of the slump, the cage is on.
Cage is gone.
I might book a fucking win quick.
You'd have been down there at 10 a.m., I guarantee.
That's true.
I gotta get this cage off. Tortoise has the key.
I'm not one to yucca yum, but like, I don't get it. I don't
it's
get
it. It's like a humiliation thing.
I don't get that. Yeah, but
it's like,
a
submissive thing.
Why would I want to watch?
What do you mean? were they gross?
No. The girl was really hot. Yeah. There was no pictures of the dude. Not that that matters, but like, what? I don't want to watch a real life porno. Like, it's already humiliating enough to watch it on my phone.
Some people are into it.
Really?
Yeah, like they want their girlfriends. They want to watch their girlfriends.
They all go to the green door.
Probably.
Oh my god, this reminds me of a story. I was playing the other day, and one of the guys in the game was like, "Did you guys hear about this green door?" And we're all kind of like joking, like, "Yeah, of course." And he goes, "Do you know they have sex there?" Like, you just watch these people fucking. It's like, yeah, it's a swingers club.
Sounds into it.
What did you think you were getting yourself into? Because I guess he like went with a few people.
Oh yeah, I think you can go and observe.
Yeah. But
like, I thought it was a cigar lounge.
I feel like they have to do some sort of vetting. Like, you don't just want
they
fucking.
They should. Oh, I would definitely hope so. Vetting. Right?
Like,
you've been Guapo?
No, it's just I used to work at. Well,
the green door.
The guy that owned the establishment used to come into our strip club all the time, and there's not really
our
a vetting
strip
process.
Club.
But he was like, we don't vet at
our
all.
Strip
we let
club.
Anyone come in.
What
that's
strip
what he
club?
Said.
Guapo worked at a strip club for years.
I worked with the Rhino for 4 years.
Doing what?
Bartending.
Fluffing?
Fluffing the girls?
Fluffing somebody?
No, at a strip club, not at the Red Rooster.
What's the Red Rooster?
It's another version of the Green Door.
Here?
Yeah.
Is it for guys only?
What, the Red Rooster?
Yeah.
Sounds like it would be for guys only.
It's been around since like, I want to say the late 70s or something.
Wow.
It's a swingers place.
I'm learning so much about Vegas.
I had no idea. I only knew about the Green Door.
Jesus, William. Tone it down.
What did William
say? I just look in the chat for a second. All I see is... When I was in my 20s, a guy and I worked with used to bang his wife out. It's like, all right.
The good old days.
Let's relax.
Yeah, people are freaks. you know? I think fly
your freak flag, I guess. It's just, I don't get the appeal. Like the voyeurism. Well, definitely not the cage. I don't understand the cage at all.
Nobody wants the cage.
Nobody should want the cage. What is appealing about the cage?
They like, there's something about like, I don't know. There's got to be some psychological.
They must have ridiculous attention spans. Because like I would just I would be like on my phone. Like bored out of my
mind.
Because
you're not into that.
Yeah, that's fair. You guys
just have the cage on. You're like arguing on Twitter. Like,
this will probably resonate with Elise Lavanna, but one of the early Friends episodes, his wife ultimately Ross's wife ends up becoming a lesbian. And prior to them getting divorced and him realizing it, they were meant to have a threesome, but it was just his wife hooking up with the girl. Uh-huh. And he's like telling the story and Joey's like, it's pretty awesome, huh? He's like, yeah. He's like, and then there's a long pause. He's like, got a little bored though. It's like, yeah, you're just kind of standing around watching, right? He's like, yeah, I made a sandwich. Like, what are you supposed to do?
I think that they sometimes will talk to the guy
right
in the corner.
Right, yeah. It's like poker
like,
to me.
Hey, how you doing?
It's very similar to poker to me in that I just don't see it as a spectator sport.
Yeah, I don't either.
You know, unless you're going to applaud me.
Like, but that's like if you want to give me a
slap on the ass and an attaboy, that maybe make things better.
I don't think he's allowed.
All right, we're getting into what Berkey's into now.
I don't think he's
now
allowed to leave the corner.
Oh, okay. No high fives. I'm just here for the high fives. Oh, Christ. All right, please. Let's talk about downswings. I can't anymore.
10 minutes was the downswing.
Yeah, that was the podcast downswing.
That was the downswing. It might be the biggest upswing the podcast has had in years. Yeah. All right. So with regards to downswings and things of the sort, I imagine a lot of people suffer through this. And it seems to me like, especially in today's era of social media, this isn't exactly something that's talked about often.
Yeah.
There's so much flexing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's just, and the craziest part to me is that it's the MTT guys that are flexing the hardest. It's like, bro, I know you went on a fucking 50-game stretch where you didn't cash a tournament. Mm-hmm. What are we doing here? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's so overly inflated, like, oh, I cashed for 7 figures this year. And it's like, okay, but your ROI was like 12%. Right. You know? So I find it interesting. It's hard for me to put myself in the audience's perspective. And it's hard for me to go back in time to when I was at that stage of my career because social media wasn't really a thing outside of Facebook. And like Facebook was always kind of, you know, whatever. So it wasn't, you weren't so inundated by flexing and stuff like that. I think back then for us, it was a lot of like what we spoke about yesterday where you would rally behind and you wanted to be a part of a collective that was winning. Mm-hmm. So even when you're downswinging, you could attach yourself to something else. When online was very popular pre-Black Friday, like the final table sweats were massive. And the after effect of that was like the interviews, the Pocket Five stuff, all that stuff where you would get associated with the people who were doing well, right? So it's like Fildo's number one on the Pocket Five rankings, and it's like, oh well, his crew is B Hanks 11 and Jason Mercier and Berkey and like all these other people, and it's like by association, we're all now just like,
I think that still good happens though, mm-hmm, right?
I think less.
Maybe less.
It's hard for me to like point to like the collectives unless they're stables.
No, there's definitely like friend groups.
Yeah, but I feel like it's just like based off the stakes you play. Like all the guys who play 25K pluses are like friendish.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of just like lump them in. There's the Americans.
No, it's like the guys that mm-hmm study together. Like there's groups of guys that like study together, you know, and they like have their little discords or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
A little Discord.
But like someone like Landon, for example, it's like he has 17 different Discords.
Yeah.
With 17 different, you know what I mean? It's like,
that's only Landon.
Yeah, but that's Landon's like that in real life too. He's kind
that's
of,
true.
You know, he has like friends all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. I guess the point that I'm trying to arrive at is not so much that, you know, today's poker player has less friends, but more so that was a nice cushion. Or maybe a nice, I guess, method of cope where the dream was still alive at all times, no matter how bad you were downswinging. Because you could just see it happening around you, right? And we weren't so sure or stuck on what the limitations of this game were, mm-hmm, or like what the upside was. We weren't so focused on, I don't think anybody knew their hourly in 2008. Like in any capacity, whether you're talking about tournaments, cash, doesn't really matter. It's just like, nobody was like, oh man, I'm making like $350 an hour whenever I go down to the win. It's like, we didn't think that way. So now that we have gotten to more of an analytic based type of realm, for me personally, it alleviates a lot of the stress and strain of downswings. And part of that is probably just like being rolled for the stakes that I'm playing for maybe the first time ever. By
that
comparison,
helps a lot.
Yeah, by comparison to like the come up where you have to be shot taking. But the second thing is just like, oh, well, okay, so this is the third time in a year that I've had a 300K downswing, and each and every time in the past, it's been responded with a 300K upswing somewhere along the lines. And, you know, you win your win rate when it's all said and done. Like, if you look at the larger sample, the 1,500 hours, like, my hourly has been pretty consistent even with the downswings in there. But I wonder, and maybe you guys can shed some light on this, I wonder what today's up-and-comers kind of feel like whenever they're going through the downswings, because they are financially strained. Maybe they're less certain of what their actual hourly is. Maybe they're playing a mix of stakes, which makes it a lot more challenging as well, because losing at the shot take is much more of a strain on your bankroll than losing at your normal stakes, or even vice versa, where like you win at the shot take, but you're consistently losing at your normal stakes where you're putting in volume. How does this affect, or how has this affected you guys in the past when it comes to your confidence, your ability to play, your ability to study, your ability to trust that you're earning?
I have a really bad response to it because I just stopped playing.
That was me in the past.
I don't think that's actually a bad response.
I it's hard for me to show up when I feel like I'm like losing like multiple sessions in a row.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I don't know how much more of this I can take.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny too, because like for live players, that could be like 8.
I know, it's not. It's never much.
It's like it's like, oh my god, I've lost the last 16 hours straight.
Yeah, and I drag it out because I like stop going.
Right. What do you do in place of it then? Do you do anything proactive, or are you just like retired for a short period of time?
Like, this is, I'm done. This sucks.
Yeah.
But well, when I was consistently like playing cash, the downswings were not very bad. Like, it would be maybe like 3 sessions max.
Yeah.
And then like, so that was like super easy to stomach. But so it's more I like think, when I was playing MTT.
I think you're a good person to ask, because there was a time frame where you had access to like way bigger stakes than you were accustomed to playing.
Yeah.
How much did that weigh upon like your mindset and your ability to get out of bed to play? Because it wasn't like you were overextending yourself. You were selling off to the point where you're playing your normal stakes.
Yeah, yeah. It was more the volatility.
Yeah.
Because it felt like I needed a lot more money to like deal with that. Because there was, you know, like double board bomb pots every half. They're doing like back-to-back stand-up games. Maybe someone wants to play like 5-card PLO for a round. Like,
right.
It's just like, you know, all the carnival stuff. And the games were really good, but you can just like, I wouldn't bring enough buy-ins.
Yeah.
So then it does affect like your play a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think those games you need to have a lot more money than like I was prepared to have.
When you say a lot more, you're not talking like long term. You're talking about in that exact session.
Yes, like with me. Like,
right.
I think, you know, the games I was used to playing were a lot less volatile. It's a lot more like, you're just chipping up and maybe you lose a pot, but then you kind of like continue up.
I think that scenario is what makes it so hard to stomach when you're losing, is that it feels so easy to consistently win.
Yeah.
Because people are just surrendering so many pots.
Yeah.
Right. So you're just basically it's like if you run anywhere close to neutral where you just flop top pairs and they hold.
Yeah.
It's so hard to lose.
Right.
And in order to lose, now all of a sudden, like you're facing the most extreme, gruesome version of variance, where it's like set over set, aces versus kings. And it's like, when does it fucking end? When you're in these shot-taking modes, though, and the game is like super splashy and gambly, it's funny because you're not really prepared to take a downswing at your normal non-volatile stakes, because it feels like the world is conspiring against you. But at the same token, taking a downswing when you're shot-taking in a game that's like fucking off the rails feels like a personal attack.
Yes, I felt like I was being attacked.
Yeah.
Like I would like lose a bomb pot with like top set on both versus like two flush draws. And,
right.
And I was like, I can't win. Like,
right.
I can't, this isn't like feasible because like I'll build up a little bit and then these bomb pots happen. I'm just like totally set up. And then I'm just like, fuck this. Like, what's happening?
It just starts to feel like there's nothing you can do to fade the volatility because it, like no hand is strong enough.
Right.
Right. So it's like, oh yeah, I'll just keep shoveling fucking money in with good hands and they're just going to keep getting outdrawn.
Yeah.
And that's like, I think these are the two mindsets that people struggle with the most at very opposing extremes, right? One scenario is like, this game is so soft and everybody's so fucking tight that anytime they put money in, it's just a cooler. And now today or recently, I'm on the wrong side of coolers. And you can convince yourself like, okay, I'll get back on the right side of coolers. But you never really frame out how you're winning, right? I
feel like I was able to do that in the like smaller games. Like it was very obvious. Like, you know, I was even the coolers, like I got, would get like second nut flush to nut flush and I would lose like very little.
Right.
It was like, I was never getting charged max like for coolers. So they didn't even feel like coolers really. I felt like I was running good.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
but if you, and I guess I don't want to speak for you, but like assume that you say like, oh, well my edge is like picking up dead pots and extracting more value when I have the best of it in the cooler situation. Doesn't like an extended downswing feel like you can't do that enough to make the money matter, right? So say you lose like,
no, I never had an extended one in
fair Conrad.
I've never had a downswing. I can't even answer this question.
Really the downswings in those games, because it's so low volatility, I didn't feel like they lasted very long at all.
I know when I was playing like cap games, if I went on like a 20 buy in downswing, I felt like it was impossible to get back. And I just, my
that
urge
would, that
to,
would definitely feel like that for me.
Yeah. Like my urge to jump stakes went through the roof.
Oh, because see, I go the opposite way.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I've already started like, out so up. High that it doesn't matter.
Mm. Okay. won't touch that one. it, to me, it feels like, especially in like structured environments where like there's a hard cap and the game plays a certain way, right? Like the average pot size is just going to be the average pot size. It's rare that it's going to exceed that. Mm. Like a 20 buy and downswing to me feels so detrimental.
That's
and
a lot.
It's yeah, especially online.
But yeah, I mean, it's a lot, but like, would you say especially online?
That's where I felt it the most.
Okay, fair. I mean, I have almost no experience recently with that, but like if I lost 10K at 2.5, which I think is very feasible, especially if you're playing like 1K cap instead of 500 cap. So it's maybe 10 buy-ins.
When's 1500?
I think the reason it's so detrimental is because you're not really playing 100 buy-in like bankroll management. I think for live, it's considerably lower, right? Like if you're playing 50 buy-ins, like that's considered reasonable.
Super, super conservative.
I mean, bankroll management is just like depending on your personal risk tolerance though. Like I don't think there's any like rule, like you have to have 100.
Agreed.
Like it just depends on like where your income
there's
comes from,
rules.
You know, like how replenishable is it?
Yeah.
Like, what's your risk tolerance?
Yeah, I think that's
I mean,
true.
The risk of ruin is a thing. So
yeah,
like,
that matters a lot.
That does matter. But, like,
but I guess the point I'm trying to extract here is like going on a 10 buy and downswing, say like 10K mm-hmm. or a 20 buy and downswing at 2.5, like call it 10K or whatever. To me, that's like it takes a real mindset shift in order to continue to grind.
Yes.
Because that to me would be like being stuck 5 buy-ins in a 2.5 game, right? Like you get stuck 2,500. Like that seems to be the point where it's like, I can't get this back.
Yeah. I usually wouldn't lose a ton in like one session. Like I would kind of cap that because I just don't feel like I am really good at grinding out of a big hole in one session.
Yeah.
So my losses per session were pretty capped at like 2,500, 3K maybe.
My stop loss was 3 buy-ins. Anytime I'd lose 3 buy-ins, I'd just be done for the day.
I just feel like you can still get back 3 buy-ins so quickly.
Yeah, I can get back
on
a different day though. Like it's like I don't feel like I'm great at grinding out of a hole.
I started thinking like when I was playing that like I'm even every single time the hand is dealt.
That's a really good way
so,
to think
like,
about
I'm
it.
Just like, I'm like, okay, I'm even. Like, I'm up. I could be up $1,000 or down $1,000, but it doesn't matter. It's like, I'm even this hand, and how do I make the best decision to have more money after this hand?
That's a good way to think right? about it. Just yeah. because like the stacks are so much bigger when you're in for three buys. The mm-hmm. game's probably fucking
yeah.
good.
Yeah, because sometimes you do get buried. You get buried, like you said, 2,500 in a 2-5 game. And you're like, I'm never going to get this back. But the goal isn't to get it back. The goal is to just continue to play well and try to win from that point on. So like if you win $600 and it's like from that point on, that's good. It's better than like saying like, how am I going to get this back? And now I'm making plays that I shouldn't make because I'm chasing my losses. Right. So like
you, that I think
I
is know. Like,
I don't think I have really, good. I don't think I change by chasing or anything. I just think I get a little like, just my mood is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
and
fair.
I don't like to play when I'm being down and bad for the game. And I start to get a little snippy at people. And
it depends on the person.
I'm going to leave. Like
Brian's point, I think is more that, if like there are two ways you can approach losing, you can try to get even or you can zoom out and try to earn your hourly.
That's how I've been thinking about it. Like especially, and I think it's a different mindset when, like you said, like when you're well rolled and when you're not.
For
like
sure. It's hard to do that when you're not
right,
well rolled.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. When I was, you know, playing like solely for a living and probably under rolled and like, you know, I'd go on these downswings like, oh my God, like how am I gonna get this back? Or like I would do what you would do and I just wouldn't play for a week because I'm like I can't just keep going and losing.
Maybe
or I'm
the luck
go broke.
Will change while so, I'm
like,
not playing.
Yeah, maybe it's a mindset thing. Maybe it's a mechanical thing. Yeah. Let me try to go figure it out. But I don't want to go play now because I'm losing. I'm obviously doing something wrong.
Can't show up and lose again.
Right,
it's too
exactly.
painful.
Right. But like when you're well rolled, you're just like, okay, I have an hourly in this game. And of course there's going to be variance. It doesn't matter if I get cooled off or whatever. Like who cares? Like, I'm going to cool somebody off, you know, next month or next week or whatever. So it's all going to even out. I mean, technically, I mean, it obviously it won't all even out because, you know, you can't play a big enough sample size.
Yeah, but usually
if you keep that mindset, then you just continue to try to play your best no matter if you're up or down.
I think
you also have to understand that you're the exception to the rule, or at least anybody who can have that kind of mindset where they can just separate that.
Yeah,
no,
just play it's not easy.
It's not a human thing.
It's incredibly difficult. I've been playing for a really long time, and I'd be lying if I didn't say losing two or three buy-ins, even playing online, and I can still be like completely zoned in. Mm-hmm. If you want the easy answer, I think is just to stop playing for a little while.
Yeah, I think breaks are necessary. Mm-hmm. I think breaks are necessary, but I think Brian's point is the professional approach.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's as unintuitive as we may make. Like, I think we glorify the emotional side of losing a little bit too much. And it's kind of born out of the fact that like people just don't tend to work on this sort of mindset issue. Right. So for me, I agree with you. Like for the majority of my career, I lived and died based off of my results that day because there was no long term. All that mattered was right here, right now. This was going to be the difference between me being
you're
able to make
like,
it.
You're like putting your whole bankroll on the table
of course.
Often.
Yeah. This was going to be the difference between me being in action or not. This was going to be the difference between me being able to have a long standing career versus having to retire, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. But at some point, like you graduate past that. And even once I graduated past that, I was very similar to Guapo in the sense that like I still saw every individual session as an individual session.
Yeah.
And I was trying to hit the high score when I was winning.
Yes.
And I was trying to get unstuck when I was losing.
Yeah, same.
And I would stay until the moment that I was unstuck, right? Like, or the game broke, whichever came first.
Yeah.
Somewhere within that middle stage of my career, and Dan was like, actually, Uncle Dan, he was a big...
Not Negrano.
No, O'Brien. He was a big...
that was fast, Bobo.
He's got it on
deck.
He
said, fuck you, just play well.
He's got it on deck.
Fuck your feelings.
He was a big help in helping me reframe this, because... especially during the time where I was playing like the big game in Ivy's room, seats were so sporadic.
Yeah.
Like I might get 10 in a row and then I might go like months without getting a seat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very hard for me not to see each one as just an individual opportunity. And he was just like, look, if we sat down and you know, let's go through this, like, what do you think you're making an hour? And I was like, well, the sample's relatively low and there's going to be some variance to this, but I think it's very sustainable to be making, you know, roughly 4 big blinds, 3 big blinds an hour based off how soft this was, which was really, I mean, we're talking 4 or 5K an hour, right? And he's like, okay, so when you're stuck a couple hundred thousand, you're still just playing for that hourly.
Right.
And that's a very significant hourly. Mm-hmm. Just like sit there, do what wins money, and just deal with the ups and downs and the roller coaster. as just being a part of the experience.
Yeah.
It's like, that's such a big flip in your perspective. Mm-hmm. And what it really is it's turning it from this individualized, characterized sort of one-off experience where you're with these seven people this one time,
and you
have to do this thing and the deck is conspiring against, and you can't believe that you're in this. It's like, no, you get to repeat this process over and over again. So you just turn that entire view of like these seven characters who are throwing money at you one way or the other, and you switch it to a graph, and like you just recognize
The graph helps.
It helps so much, even if it's a tiny sample, even if it's 100 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just helps so much because you get to actually see
what the graph looks like.
No, it doesn't. If it goes down, that's fine.
Right.
What you don't want to see is a lack of movement.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to see a flat line graph because then it's like, well, what the fuck are we doing here?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Clearly, I'm just doing things that get me even, whether I'm winning or losing, I'm doing things that regress me to zero. Mm-hmm. And
or
that's
if
not
it's
good.
It's just only going down. That's
I mean, that's depressing.
Not great.
It's not fun. But
it helps
also,
when you start off hot. Right. Then you have like something to look at.
A little
at.
Buffer.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like I looked at, I've been downswinging for like, I don't know, a month and a half now. By the way, I started the year off super, super hot. So I upswung big in January and half of February. So I've been downswinging for like, I don't know, 45 days or so, right? And I looked at my graph for this year, and then I looked at it over the last like 800 hours. And I'm basically flat. So I've pretty much like made, I don't know, like $100 an hour over the last 800 hours. But looking at the graph, the peaks and valleys are massive.
Yeah.
They're massive. It's just like there's this huge uptick and then there's this sharp regress towards zero and then another huge sweat. It's like, okay, well, all we have to do is string a couple of those upswings together with like a very small downswing, a small correction.
Right.
Instead, right. It's kind of like,
you're not like in the red for a long period of time, which is important.
I'm not in the red at all.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
Not
that's what I mean.
All.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And it's kind of like, people who are longtime holders for Bitcoin. This is another thing that really helped shape my perspective is like, I'm never selling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just never selling. So why the fuck?
Michael Saylor.
Well, like, why would I ever look at the graph on the day-to-day?
Yeah.
It's going to move.
Yeah, yeah. You're not looking at the five-minute chart.
Yeah.
Right, like, what are you going to find? Movement?
Right.
Of course it's going to fucking move.
Right.
But hopefully, if things keep going as we suspect, year over year, the floor continues to raise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same thing with the way that you approach this with win rate, with the perspective of like your long-term ability to earn. You just hope that the floor keeps creeping up higher and higher and higher and zero is no longer an option.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing that keeps me sane. Now, the second that I decide to rack up and put another fucking L in the book, am I happy? No. It's going to be a bit of decompressing. There's going to be 45 minutes to an hour where it's like, is there a bridge in this fucking city?
Yeah.
And can I drive off of it?
Burke, what if I have another option for you?
What's the other option, Conrad?
Well, there's a lady in the chat that said, if you show a nipple, she'll pay.
How much?
So, you know, maybe you have a career.
Just a nipple?
Just a nipple. That's all she asked
He's
for,
showed
man.
That before.
I was wondering how Conrad was going to derail the
See, this is the difference between men and women, and rightfully so. This would be so out of pocket.
Be instantly banned.
Yeah, so out of pocket if you were a man asking a woman to do this, and you absolutely should be considered, you know, not okay.
Yeah.
For me, though, it's a
deal. Like, how much?
I'm like, let's negotiate price here. I'm cheap.
Get unstuck real quick.
A male nipple is much different.
Yeah, I mean, I got nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
Nice. Very nice, sir.
All right, Fokker. Christ. Thanks, Conrad.
I don't downswing.
You guys shut the fuck up.
You
I waited
upswing.
A very long time for that.
Okay.
That was the perfect time to derail the conversation.
Well, since you don't downswing, you mind sliding me a little tab money when you get a chance?
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
I started at zero. It's always an upswing.
I don't know what that means. I really don't.
What does that mean?
Some version of boy math? I don't get it.
He doesn't believe in negative numbers.
Yeah. They're never negative. It's always zero.
The imaginary numbers, if you will.
Negative.
I think one thing that happens a lot is people start to, especially with MTTs, like, because you can downswing so long.
Forever.
And it's really demoralizing to just shovel money in and not have any results for a long time. But like people start to question if they're winning, or maybe they were just running good before.
That was kind of what I was asking on the onset.
Yeah.
It's like, do those thoughts, like, do the invasive thoughts ever win? Because like for me, those intrusive thoughts are just there always.
Yeah.
Right? Like for me to like zoom out and look at like, oh, how did you do over the last year? It's like, oh, I made money. Right? But then I zoom in a little bit on the graph and it's like, oh, but for like 1,000 hours, you've been breaking even.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, then how did I make money? Did I just run good?
Right.
Is that possible? And then I zoom out further. It's like, over the last 20 years, how'd you do? It's like, well, I made a lot of money. But it's like, again, with did sample and good? Everything else, it's like, did I just get like really good opportunities and cash in? Did I just run really good in very like undisclosed way?
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, it's very hard, even though I feel like I'm good at the game and I understand it pretty deeply, it's very hard not to just let the thoughts creep in of like, well, when do I get off this ride?
Yeah.
Right? When does it all end, and when does it become a harsh reality that like I was never winning?
I know. I think that I feel like everybody gets that thought though. Like I've heard so
many people.
Especially
in a downswing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it's a super amp. Oh, it happens more to me in an upswing.
Really?
To be quite honest. Yeah.
You're like, I
do feel like, when's
so
the
good?
Other shoe going to drop? Yeah. I'm like, all right, I'm running really good. That means that you don't get going to run bad soon.
You don't get the, like, when you're just like winning session after session after session.
Yeah.
I'm
like, this is
I'm
unsustainable.
So good.
Like,
no,
I don't
get that at all.
I'm like, this
no.
is
well,
this,
I'm just crushing
this amount
these
of
idiots.
Luck is unsustainable, and I'm going to be in pain soon.
One of my closest friends that I like talk a lot of shop with, you know, she plays in these games, and so like I trust a lot of the feedback because she knows the pool really well. I was on like, I don't know, an 18 or 19 game heater where I might have lost once or twice, and it was very, very small. And after my third win in a row on the boat, where I was up like 260K going into day four, she just sends me a text and goes, wow, you really can't lose. And at that moment, I knew
signal.
It was all over.
Top signal. Yeah.
I just knew it was all over. It's like, God damn it. I really thought I was playing well up until this very moment. But fuck me. I'm never going to win again, am I? I just went to bed that night going, you're never going to win again. Like, that's it. It's over for you, man. Just cash out now while you can. Like, this is your chance to sell the stock at peak and never buy back in.
But I think like the zoomed out look and like the understanding your hourly and these kind of things, it goes both ways, right? Like I said, like, you know, you think you're the best when you're winning, but actually like it's easier if you're thinking on an hourly term or this is my win rate, that when you do just crush it for a week or a month, you are like, wow, look back at some of the hands, like, wow, I'm just running really, really well, which is good because you know you're going to run really bad at some other point.
Yeah.
And then all the other hands in between are where you make your hourly.
Yeah. Do you ever suffer from like winner's tilt, especially if you're
not as
part of a downswing?
So not as much now with the mindset that I take of like every hand starts at zero.
So like when, let's say you're downswinging for an extended period of time and now you start a session and you're like up an inconceivable amount in the first couple of hours. Like you win like 4 buy-ins right away.
Yeah.
Is there a part of you that like you start to feel this heavy weight to leave?
No.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm going home.
No, I'm like, I'm
that.
On fire.
I'm like, I'm going home.
I gotta win this pack.
I'm gonna get rich tonight.
It makes it real easy for me to like want, like, wow, I just want to like a ton. I'm just gonna go home and watch some Housewives with Michelle.
No, I mean, I try to put in like, if I'm grinding, like I want to put in a substantial session. Hours wise, like I don't want to just play for a couple hours and rack up and leave.
I just like making a huge red chip castle.
when I was playing, like prior to high stakes, when I would play like 5-10 and below, I would, if I won really, really fast, like first 45 minutes, I'm just winning like what I expect to win for the session or more. And again, this has a lot to do with the pressure of bankroll on table, but I wanted to leave always.
Well, you could, if you, it's a bankroll thing, like you could stand up, go like take a walk.
You're I never back. Left.
You're also playing way kind of bigger when you're talking. Like you're talking like playing 5-10.
A lot more risk,
10-20. So yeah. You're playing bigger. So
it was
the number is different.
What it was is the same thing as like stringing a bunch of wins together. my immediate fear of I'm going to regress to the mean and I'm going to have a bad time doing it. Like, we'll just immediately kick in. It's like, oh, buddy, you're up $6,000 in 510 in the first 45 minutes.
Something bad has to happen.
Let me tell you how this ends.
Yeah.
You get down to zero way more often than you get to 10K.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like, so I don't know what your expectation is by sitting here any fucking longer.
Usually when you go up that fast, like, the game's probably kind of sick. So, like, you're not going to stand up and leave. Like...
But should you?
Yeah. No. Well, that's what I said. That's why you have to think of like it works both ways, right? Mm-hmm. If you're up a bunch of money and you're just crushing it and the hand gets dealt, like you're even in the hand. Let me just play this hand the best of my ability. It doesn't matter because like it just works both ways.
There's always a
and,
guy.
And it helps you not like want to leave and it helps you not go on like winner's tilt and start splashing around more than you should.
There's always a guy at the table that, you know, you just look at and you're like, yep. I'm not leaving until you leave.
Until you leave.
And that's the only reason why I'm there.
I don't think it should ever be based on like the dollar amount that you're winning.
What a great
time.
Wow. That wasn't, look at that.
What great timing for there's always a guy at the table.
Right. See that guy right there with all those chips? I'm not leaving until they're all gone.
I'm not leaving until he leaves.
What were you saying, Melissa?
Like, if the game is sick, you should stay.
Yeah,
like, that's where you're going to get like the higher end of your hourly.
Yeah, 100% true. 100% true.
It shouldn't be like, oh, I won a bunch, so I'm going to go, because like it's like, well, the game's still good.
What about the meta aspect of it all? Because I think we would be doing ourselves a disservice to not acknowledge that when somebody's running really hot or somebody's running really badly, the collective observes this and adjusts their play. Whether they realize it consciously or not, they definitely adjust their play.
Uh-huh.
Do you find yourself more or less hesitant to pull triggers based off of the meta, like when you're running well versus when you're running poorly?
I mean,
or do you just like play straight strat?
I think I've can think of many examples where like I was up like a lot and just like made a big bluff because it made sense to me, and then like it'd be like some wrecks like, why'd you bluff? Like, you're up so much, you could have cashed out. I'm like, it's like fine. Like,
hey,
I would
grandma.
Do that. I would do that again. Like,
right.
I don't know. I don't, because when I'm in a hand, like, I'm just thinking about the hand.
For me, it's when I'm losing. It's not that I get gun shy. It's just that I'm very aware of the fact that I think people are going to think I'm pressing.
Yeah.
And so, like, the desire to bluff is high. Mm-hmm. But the actual follow through, I really try to be mindful of making sure that like this is reasonable, not just reasonable, but like this is effective and going to work, even if they expand their calling range to some degree.
Yeah.
Right. And when I'm winning, it's the exact opposite. It's like my desire to value bet thinner just goes through the roof because I think people think that like you're trying to run them over. And so they, in both instances, I think they call too wide.
Really, I think when you're losing and people are noticing that you're losing, that you're going to just like get.
You're like a target.
You just have a target on your back. Right. If you are more of a wilder player or just very more active player, like people are just going to try to trap you all the time. Yeah. So there is no reason to pull that fucking trigger. Like, you're just getting trapped.
The last hand I played last night is a good indicator of like what I'm talking about. And I think because I was getting wrecked, it's probably just a spot to not pull the trigger for a couple reasons that I'll explain. But effectively what happened was we were playing five-handed. It went open. I defend the big blind with queen eight off, queen of clubs, and it comes 10 sorry,
no, this isn't the end of my
no hand. This is not the end of my hand.
Sorry, I was
it comes 9-7-6 with one club. So 9-7-6 rainbow, one club. I have queen eight with the queen
button
of clubs.
Open?
Cut off. So queen eight, queen of clubs. 9-7-6 rainbow. I believe it was the seven of clubs. I block for quarter. Pretty good spot to lead, I think. Jack eight was a flop straight. So 10-9-7. Yeah, because I was drawing to the nut straight or second nut straight, whatever. So I block for a quarter, cutoff raises, I call 10-9-7 rainbow, seven of clubs. Turn is like the deuce of clubs, something to that, like a brick club. I check my open ender. He bets like three quarters pot. I call. River Ace of Clubs, which obviously I can never win, and appears to be like a reasonably bad card. But in thinking about it, it's like, well, what hands raise my lead on the flop and then back into a flush? It's like there aren't very many. It's like there probably isn't very much 10x of clubs that's raising the flop. Some, maybe, but like most of it's just going to call, unless it's exactly like Jack 10, which has a gut shot. And then, you know, the Ace of Clubs hits the river. So it's like you can rule out like Ace 8, you can rule out like Ace 9 for the pair plus, whatever, like all these hands. So
I like over pairs and stuff.
Right, but that's not a flush.
Yeah.
Right. So that's this is my thought process. By the way, I don't try to bluff the river. I know that I can't just like lead pot here and ever get a fucking real hand to fold because my image is shit and I'm just over bluffing. So I check. And I'm also not even confident that like I get leads for big, maybe for small. So I just check.
But you do know what you can do.
Right. So he he bets three quarters pot. And now I'm just like really in the grind. I'm just like, there's no fucking flushes here. Like what flush exists? I have the queen of clubs. He doesn't have queen jack of clubs. Like, you know, I guess he could have like 9-8 of clubs or jack 8 of clubs or king jack of clubs, but these all seem like real stretches. So it's like we have pot and a half behind. So I think he bet like 6K into like 9 and we're 35 behind. I'm just like, I'm all in. I'm all in. Like, I don't think you have flushes here very often. How could you?
Just like so many missed straight draws though that would lead flop, right?
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't jam them on river without a club. So most of them are either going to be...
Does he know that?
Yes. He would know that. But also, the missed straight... It's difficult because there aren't a lot of 8Xs that don't have a pair. And turning a pair into a bluff here would be difficult because then you definitely wouldn't have a club. Unless it's like 9-8 off with the 8 of clubs, I guess. Anyway, like... I think in theory my play is really good. Uh-huh. Like it's hard to find bluffs for my range, based off of how it played. But in practice, it's like what I'm forgetting is that he's very aware that I'm buried and also capable of like doing shit like this.
Yeah.
So he's probably not value betting like one or two pair on the river.
Mm-hmm. Would you bet? When you fucking jammed, you probably got up and started high-fiving everybody at the table.
It's like
he's like, Burke, he just jammed!
Insta-call. Instantly called. God. Instantly called.
With
9-8 of clubs.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah, he just has the hand that he's supposed to have. He flopped a pair in an open-ender and then backed into a flush. Yeah. And it's like, I was even thinking about it on the turn where I was just like, this is weird that he's betting this turn.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there aren't a lot of really strong hands for him unless he just has Jack-8 somehow, which... That's not a big portion of his range, especially when I have an 8. I'm just like, this is all so fucking weird to me. I was like, okay, on the river, I'm just like, oh, he's like value betting like two pair, and I'm just gonna fuck him. No, of course not. He would just
he might not even fold two pair.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're stuck in this sense, like
he would, but like I think the likelihood that he bets it is maybe 1%.
Okay,
right? It's just I don't want to like say to the players or anything like that, but he's just not value betting thin here. Huh. Especially when I'm buried and the meta of all of this is like Berkey wants to play an 80K pot here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Period. Like he just wants to play an 80K pot, and I don't know if I have the gumption to like bet call off a set when a backdoor flush falls and he just has them. You know?
Set. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's gonna call a set.
If he bets it, yeah.
Versus you?
For sure. For sure. If he bets it.
Yeah,
if he bets it. But it's like whenever you're facing 150% pot jam, it's like, and you're not gonna face another size.
Yeah.
Not like I'm gonna check raise click.
Yeah.
You know? So a lot of playing deep stack poker, a lot of like what makes me money is the fear to pull a trigger. Mm-hmm. So like hands that are very clear value bets, don't go for it.
Yeah.
Because the option to check jam is still available. And they're just like, I mean, what do you want me to do? What if he fucking check shoves on me? What am I getting value from when I bet?
You get to like realize more equity that way too.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like a lot of what I don't think people realize is like there are a lot of spots to go thin for value where it's not clear what you're getting value from,
mm-hmm.
but most of the value is getting their bluffs to check jam.
Yeah.
And then you calling off.
Yeah.
And the way they think about it is like, oh, there isn't much of a value target here. So they're just folding when they have worse and calling when they have better.
By better so,
right.
Yeah.
And what they're not recognizing is like, no, actually they're jamming worse a lot of the time. And they're probably jamming better the rest of the time. So like you may never get called, but it's okay as long as they bluff.
Yeah.
People are like afraid to face the bluff because it's like, oh, I don't want to turn a value hand into a bluff catcher. It's like, well, that's how you win a fucking 1,000 big blind pot.
Yeah.
You do those things, you know? So yeah, needless to say, I think the meta is real. And I imagine it's even more real at small stakes where you have a lot of recreationals.
Yeah, because they'll be like, oh, that guy's running bad, so that means I'll run good against him. Yeah.
I find myself
I feel like the meta would be more real at your stakes.
I do too.
Like, kinda. And it's not even because people, just because people are aware of the meta, like, and like,
yeah, but like, you're just so used to seeing the same faces and they play the same way, you know what I mean? Like, it's not so obvious that anything's changed. But what I do find myself doing is like, if somebody's running super fucking hot and they're capable of getting out of line, I take note, like, oh my god, this guy's 3-bet like a dozen times in the last hour. He definitely doesn't fucking always have it. And I try to take a stand and they have aces. Yeah. It's like, no, bro, like, he just had a good day.
Yeah.
That happens a lot too. It's just like at smaller stakes, right? Like, you might just get like, you know, 5 or 8 good hands in an orbit and you're just opening every time. And they're like, this guy's a fucking maniac.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, he's a maniac. It's like, it won't even be me. Like, it will be somebody across the table is just opening every hand. And someone will say to me, like, this guy's just like, what's he doing? He's just opening every hand. He's a maniac. I'm just like, no, bro. He probably just got dealt like the 5 good hands in a row.
The most sage advice the tortoise ever gave me was like 2003 when we first started playing. And I was just ranting about what an idiot this guy was at the table. And I can't believe that he had it in the spot. And he just looks at me and goes, idiots get aces too, man. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's actually a pretty good fucking point.
I feel like every time I sit down at the South Point within the first orbit, somebody turns to somebody and says, oh, I'm gonna get this fucking
Yes.
It does not
can't wait to get
fucking
this guy.
If I win a pot in the first orbit, it does not fail that somebody's fucking grumbling to somebody. And I'm just like, what is wrong with your life that you have to say
it's
this?
It's because you're loud and you drink.
Yeah. That is kind of the thing, though. Like, at certain stake levels, obviously less professionals at a stake, the more this is gonna occur. But even just at like certain levels, like, people just haven't matured enough yet, it's a personal war. Some level of like warfare every time you sit down, and like the 6 hours that you're there, there's only one mission.
An enemy, you know?
Yeah, that it gives you something to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It can be boring grinding low stakes sometimes. Right. You gotta make up enemies in your house.
You gotta find a break enemy.
Yes. Right. Well, that's what I would do, is like, because I'd see the same people all the time, be like, this guy, I don't like his attitude.
Just always just table change to their
certain
their
people
table.
I just want to retire.
No, I wasn't like bum hunting him. I just didn't like his attitude. So I was like, I'm just going to wreck him.
Oh, exactly. You go to their table and then you get like the fun players to hate that guy with you.
Yeah. Like, this guy's no fun. He doesn't want to straddle.
He doesn't play any hands. He doesn't straddle. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah.
You just turn all the wrecks against him.
that's how you do it.
You're a bad guy.
I am.
Bad fucking guy. All right, let's get through this in the muck hand that I played yesterday. I'm not happy about it.
Aww.
Oh, we're going to me.
Oh.
I'm so used to you presenting.
Okay.
I'm sorry. No,
I can run through Berkey's hand real quick.
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Run through.
Let's see what we got.
Got to put it up there because I don't remember. So Berkey, you know, he's down at the Bellagio, losing his fucking mind. And,
by the way, this was a 3-hour session yesterday.
Right. You know, he covers the table as always. Button opens, 3x, 300. Berkey has a 6-5 of spades. He decides a 3-bet to 1,500. He's met with a 4-bet and to 4,000. Berkey calls. Flop comes 10-7-5 rainbow. And no spade. And so he got bottom pair. He checks. In position bets 4,000, which is half pot. And he calls. Turn is a 6 of diamond, bringing backdoor diamonds. And now we have 2 pair. And we decide to lead 6,500 into 16,000. And we are met with a call. And the river is the king of diamonds. And we say, you know what? We're all in for a pot.
And yeah, sizings are a little off here. It's about 95% pop, but it's fine.
And we are called by top set.
All right.
Of kings.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, when we left. Did we leave after that?
No. I decided to run that 40K bluff first.
Oh, okay.
And then I left.
Ah, I got you.
You have to run one more.
What were you listening to on the drive home?
honestly, for the first time, might have just straight been silence.
Yeah. Sometimes it's silent.
What has you mostly in the muck here? Is it the River Jam with the bottom two pair?
I thought so. I wasn't sure what to do.
What were you doing? Were you bluffing? Were you betting?
Of course I'm not bluffing. Bluffing? What are you talking about?
The tort never fucking value bet this
just
way.
Just asking, man. I mean, there's a straight, there's a flush out there, there's higher two pairs. It's like...
It's a four-bet pot. There's just... It's like,
asking, man.
You can never be too safe.
Hey, I'm just asking. I'm just here to ask questions.
Yeah, these are good questions.
I mean, yes, I lose to a set of kings and, you know, maybe one or two combos of king 10 suited. And he might have some pocket 10s.
Does he have any, like, ace 10 of diamonds? Like, stuff like that?
Four betting? I don't think it should be like ace queen of diamond. I mean, it shouldn't even be like, I shouldn't even say that. Like, most of his four bets should be offsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you want, like, it sucks to fold ace 10 suited when you get.
Right. Yeah. Like, if he has ace jack of diamonds, he just calls. If he has
ace jack off.
Ace queen of diamonds, I mean, probably just calls, but maybe sometimes.
Should mostly. That's what I mean. Like, to me, the king of diamonds. So I kind of botched the river spot here because it was the king of diamonds. Like, if it's the deuce of diamonds, I block. Mm-hmm. Because he still has ace king of diamonds,
right,
for
exactly.
Sure.
Yeah,
he probably still has king queen of diamonds in some frequency, or king jack. Like, these are where your bluffs pull from. It's
when
the
you're
Broadway
running bad
cards.
The king of diamonds comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I still think I botched this spot.
So when you block here on the river, does that mean you're just folding?
I would imagine this hand qualifies as a call.
Yeah.
I don't think I have many better hands. I have a little bit of 8-9. And then I have some sets.
It's real hard to block fold here.
Yeah. No, you could definitely have block folds, but it's going to be like...
No, not with your hand, though.
Right. It's going to be like my jack nine suited, queen nine suited, king nine suited would be a block fold. King queen, if I played it this way, would be a block fold. Like, all your one pairs are going to strongly consider block folding, but I think if you have two pair plus... you just have a pretty clear call because he should have so much ace of diamond in range.
Mm-hmm. How do you get there with king queen?
If I check call like king queen of hearts on the flop and then block turn
with king queen of hearts. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, well, what you're realizing is that I probably shouldn't be playing block on turn, but or not block. I guess I bet 40% pot. Yeah. But like, I thought in game that the turn was a very clear lead spot because I thought that card would get checked back at a really high rate.
Yeah, that's fair.
And like leading a hand like king, queen of hearts on the turn, I mean...
That doesn't seem like a thing here.
It's not bad. You get hands like ace, king of spades to fold.
Right. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm on board with that one.
I mean, if you... I don't know that turn block is a thing or turn lead is a thing. Maybe it's just like flat out not, but you should get high cards to fold.
You would just do it with like range.
Not
you're saying,
No, I mean like the over cards that you choose to lead would mostly either be diamonds or low frequency. Like, I imagine if we're leading like two pair plus and our combo draws and like basically our high equity hands, I would imagine we would want hands that like clean up equity as well. Like our overpairs, jacks, hands like nines and eights, probably. And then, yeah, maybe
but
like...
What if we're like, if we're leading this card because it hits our range more than theirs?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we be leading our range then?
I don't think so.
But I mean, even though it puts us in a very large pickle.
I don't think you're ever going to turn lead range.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
That's just like not a thing. Yeah, you're for sure have a lot of hands that want to check. Like,
check.
You just have ace 10 that wants to check. Uh-huh. Right? Like, a lot of your 10x type stuff wants to check. But, like, yeah, I think you want to lead.
I wonder if you lead bigger, though. You're only
so that was kind of a
portion of your.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little. I said in chat I thought 2E might be the proper size. Maybe I fucked up.
Landon said he liked 40, I think.
He said he liked 40. I'm not even sure lead is a thing, to be honest. It gets really wonky because it's a 4-bet pot. Like, that's what made me think that it has to be a thing because it's a 4-bet pot. Mm-hmm. Like, I might not lead here in a 3-bet pot. and yeah. for sure not in a single raise pot.
Right.
But in a four bet pot, I feel like Rangers are so narrow, and I have so much more of the Fantastic Four.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That it seems like a pretty good lead spot.
And you have like more tens and sevens too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have like way more sets.
Yeah. So I thought I had enough board. Advantage here to justify lead, but I think maybe to Guapo's point, like it's not easy to find bluffs. Like you have to be somehow three bet calling ace nine, ace eight suited. And then just like leading them in full, which I mean, those for me personally, I don't know what theory looks like yet, but those are like really low frequency three bets for me. I'm going to lean on higher suited aces and lower ones. So like maybe I have ace six here.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what the...
I think it's just like unpaired overcards. I think or it's ace like
four
hands...
Suited, ace maybe? Four?
Yeah. Yeah, ace four suited would be a good one. Ace three suited would be a good one. But, you know, we have to be check raising some stuff. I guess those really wouldn't fit the check raise. But I'm thinking, like, you know, hands like queen jack, king jack suited that block backdoors. But maybe that's just, like, the wrong way to go about this. Again, I'm kind of just, like, thinking about this logically, how my mind was working in real time. I would have led, like, unpaired overcards.
I have a question about preflop. Are you calling four bets with all the Fantastic Four here 100%?
If I three bet it, yeah, because yeah. I'm only
so
three betting.
So if you three bet, you're calling a four bet.
Yeah, but I three bet them like, size, I probably
it's
only
like
three
the
bet
thing
them
we
like a third
about,
of the time.
Like the other day where you have a low frequency three bet. If you get four bet, you always call.
Right.
Okay.
Right. If I have fives here, which I three bet maybe like 5% of the time, I'd always call it.
Yeah.
Right. But it depends on the size of their four bet.
Maybe
sort
like
of.
It's tough I don't for them to maybe out. Like 5-4, but you probably wouldn't need to like start turning that into a bluff. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if they make like a ridiculously huge four bet, but they shouldn't be doing that. They should be just.
It's only, you can only make it so big.
Yeah, I think 5-4 is one of those hands that benefits a lot from just going check.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar to like 10X.
Right.
I feel like we're not bluffing much with pairs.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we would have some like merge leads like 10-9, 7-8, but that's more so for board coverage sake and also just like protection. Like we get a little bit of value by leading those hands, but 5-4 is just too weak, I think.
Yeah.
And the five is like...
It's like too strong to turn into a bluff.
Right, so right. And the five is not really important to have in range if it pairs. It's just a pretty good card for him. So yeah, I mean, we can take a look at like what the wizard thinks about this spot. So first and foremost, I guess I'll show you guys the ranges. This is what my range looks like here out of position. I play a little bit of traps with aces. I'm mostly going to be like pair dense, as you can see. I have the Fantastic Four here, 9-8 suited, the lowest frequency. It's just the one that I three bet the least. Same thing with 10-8 suited, and 5-4 suited. Like these are all just like very low frequency. I included 7-deuce suited because the game is on. So if I three bet suited 7-deuce, I'm going to call.
Yeah.
But I don't three bet it there that often. So I just have low frequency. And then of course, like the wheel aces, as I mentioned, so I was wrong. I don't even have A6, although maybe practically I would. I should have some ace nine, ace eights, but I just don't really three bet these middling aces really all that much. I'm much more like suited Broadway dense. Mm-hmm. The issue here being that like when we get four bet, it's kind of shitty because these hands block his, four bet bluffs. And you should be able to see that here. So like King Jack off is where he's pulling a lot of his four bet bluffs, ace Jack off, ace 10 off. And then I guess a little bit of ace jack suited sneaks in there.
I'm
although,
kind of surprised, like king jack. I guess king jack suited just calls on the button.
Yeah,
I know, like cut off first button.
The suited ones like to call. Even cut off, it's the offsuit ones that you'd prefer to four bet.
Really?
Yeah. Mainly because you dominate some of my suited three bet calls.
Uh huh.
So like my jack 10 suited, queen jack suited, you can see that like they just don't fold.
Right.
I'm surprised to see that the suited broadways aren't just three betting pure.
For
small blind versus button?
No, we're way too deep.
Yeah, you can remember how deep they are.
Okay, you can't take hands that marginal and just like all
I'm
thinking,
I'm 100.
You're back
blinds.
In 100 big blind.
Yeah. Also, there's an ante, so you do a lot of fucking calling from the small blind.
Yeah.
Like a significant amount.
The
king nine off is a pure call here, and like that's a hand that
the small blinds range so much.
Yeah. Like that's an easy example of a hand that most people who play non-ante miss all the time. Like king nine off, pure call. Mm-hmm. From small blind, which is just like, okay, what are we doing? Like that's a hand that usually we're conditioned to just fold.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, like you can see that like we're pretty symmetrical here. He has a lot of the suited king X, which I don't. which is another reason why the King of Diamonds is such a particular card, where it's just like, this fucking guy doesn't have flushes. Like, and he could just river top pair. Although I guess I do get fucked a little bit by like the King seven, though. I don't think, I mean, we'll see when the strategy comes out. I don't imagine that these hands c-bet at the higher frequency. Mm-hmm. Like when he has a hand like King seven, King five, I would imagine that these hands check back.
I think so.
More frequently than like a 10 or
does he find those hands in practice? Hand.
Some,
yeah.
I mean,
most people don't.
He calls King seven suited the power. So,
anybody
who names a hand, yeah, anybody who names a hand tends to have it.
Yep,
he has that in full.
In my experience, right, just pure King seven, it's in there. So we can see that obviously flop leads don't really exist. His sizing supposed to be 2/3 pot. He went a little bit smaller here with half pot. So I imagine that'll just increase the frequency at which he bets from 60% maybe to like 65%. It's not going to be significant. What do we learn? Oh, it didn't change it at all, actually. Nope. So identical betting strategies here. So yeah, you could see that the King 7 with no backdoor checks the most. So King 7 of hearts checking the most here. I imagine same thing with fives. Yeah, King five of hearts, pure check back. So we can at least reduce those combinations down to two. And then when the diamond hits the river, it's down to one. Well, it's down to one of King seven.
Yeah.
Still two of King five. So they exist. Obviously, very low frequency four bets to begin with. Not a range bet. 8-7 pure check back. That's nice to see. Although I imagine in practice, this hand just bets. Like, pretty good one to fit in there, especially when you have the seven deuce as well.
God, I feel like people don't four bet that much.
I mean, you can see it's only like 5%. Yeah. So this is probably pretty reflective of what we would actually see. Yeah. And hands like Queen Jack off, if they're in there, are supposed to like nearly pure check. But again, like pretty easy to just fit things into a range bet. I imagine like if the ace deuce, king deuce type stuff is in there, this is where a lot of the checks and give ups would come from. Because this isn't a board that screams range bet. Like, there are a lot of hands where you might just be like, ah, I'm just going to check back. And honestly, like, against this player, I think, like, he might check back, like, more close to theory than we would actually see practically from a lot of the field.
Jax is checking.
Right. Which, for what it's worth, maybe I wouldn't see Jax in this check back line that much, but I wouldn't be shocked to see, like, queens or kings. Mm-hmm. Not a ton, but some. And I definitely wouldn't be shocked to see ace king. So when the bet does come through, like, we can reduce some of these combinations. I assume my hand's gonna be a pure call. Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, pretty much a pure call. And the only reason it even raises a tiny bit is because there's a backdoor. But okay, so we're gonna continue through with a call. Now
I'm
things
gonna
get
shocked
dicey.
If I see the king queen lead here.
Yeah, I will be too, to be honest.
I hope it's there.
Well, what it really comes down to is the principle of whether or not I'm able to lead.
Yeah.
And I think this is a big equity shifting card, but I just could be very wrong based off of the fact that he has all these suited kings in range.
You're gonna have like really good hands on this board that will want to not get checked back on, you know, like
the issue becomes if like my advantage isn't like basically if he has so much pocket tens,
yeah,
that 6-5 now loses equity.
He does check back pocket tens.
But you mean bet? He bet flop.
It was check back sometimes.
Too. Oh yeah. It does check back some of the time, but he bet, so we should be able to expect it to be
there.
So turn 6 of diamonds. Do we get it? Come on, do we get it?
No.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Wow.
Okay.
There you go.
Lead exists.
For this, so did you put this size in, or this is the size
they gave? Wow. So I B40'd, obviously. Uh-huh. We'll see if that changes things much. I assume it will just like reduce a little bit.
What did what's the size it gave?
25.
Oh, okay.
Percent.
It was smaller.
Yeah, but
I thought it would be bigger, maybe.
I thought you may have had something there, but then again, I wasn't confident that the lead existed either.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I bet 40%, it cuts my lead range in half, and 6-5 goes from a bet to no bet, which is kind of brutal. How do I want to go about this?
You get to lead for 25, but not 40.
Right. Let's add in quarter. and see if it eliminates 40 altogether. I imagine it will. But let's give us two sizes and see what happens. Yeah, so it all but eliminates 40. Let's see what the theoretical response is to a small size. See if he's ever raising anything that's like one pair plus. Okay, so yeah, like he's supposed to raise with kings, aces here a lot, which gives a lot of credibility to the bet.
And like, I guess those are probably flush draws.
No, it's the non-flush draws. Can't be flush. Yeah, king seven of diamonds raises some, but less than king seven of spades. I imagine it has something to do with like blocking two pairs.
Yeah.
And just getting the showdown. And, you know, I do think we would face that. That's kind of the other funny part is like we would probably almost always face raise when we're beaten, which becomes a bit tricky. But I think I'm actually surprised that he's raising so much simply because he has no 8-9 and he just doesn't really have many diamond combos, so it's only the combo draws of king x. Right, he has a little bit of he has no ace five because the five of diamonds is out, so a little bit of ace jack of diamonds, which plays pure call to defend his range. So he's ace jack of diamonds, ace king of diamonds. That's literally it when it comes to river flushes. And when the river is the king of diamonds, he has none, or sorry, he has one. So like, you know, I think my thought process as it played out was pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And this is versus quarter. If we, I wonder, there's no way to force this lead range for a larger size. But by the way, as I mentioned, king, queen suited lead.
Yeah.
Not just diamonds, all variety. King, 10 suited, obviously. We're doing that for value. Same thing with queen 10 suited.
We're leading a lot.
We're leading a lot of the over
cards. That's weird.
Yeah,
it's just such an advantage card for you.
Super
weird. But it's not because we need coverage on those over cards as well. And
you're like blocking their like over cards that fold, right?
Kind of. I mean, like we're leading all varieties of suited ace, king, ace, queen. And
so I wasn't really wrong. We kind of are leading range for, we could be like.
No, there's a lot of no leads here. There's a lot of.
And it's also like all
checks.
The leads are at a frequency that's kind of like
low-ish.
less than
one,
half.
Two,
yeah.
Three.
Yeah. You're never going to have 76. You're never going to have 76% check frequency and get the lead range.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but.
You can lead every hand here.
No, it's just you can't lead every hand.
You can check every hand
it's
here.
It's 23% of your range, 24% of your range. Like it's not.
Well, it's not 24,
more of a pure check than is a pure lead.
It's not 24% of your range. It's 24% frequency.
Right.
So it could be 100% of your range at a 24% frequency, but like you definitely cannot range bet here. That's abundantly
100%
clear.
100% of your range at 20. Okay.
So like, let's look at his response when facing lead and see like why those overcards tend to lead. And this is exactly it. Ace king suited folds pure if it doesn't have a flush draw.
Mm-hmm.
So you lead ace queen. Right, mm-hmm. Like you lead king queen. That's the idea behind it, is that you get dominating hands
pretty
to fold.
Cool.
Ace jack pure fold if it's not ace jack of diamonds with a sliver of raising out of ace jack of hearts. But I think that's just
you
for balance.
Some
sake.
Pairs to fold.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Ace five of clubs and diamonds.
King six.
Right. All versions of king six are going to fold at some frequency. So yeah,
this is the quarter size.
This is for the quarter size. So obviously it'd be 40, even though it doesn't really happen from our side very much.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. You have king, queen, and you quarter, and you get like pairs to fold.
Like when we be 40, look at what their folding range looks like. So it's ace, king off in full, mm-hmm. ace, king suited 75% of the time, ace, jack suited 75%+ of the time, a lot of pairs, king, six, king, five. Which those aren't necessarily great, but we block those, so it's also not a big issue.
Get the bounty hand out a little bit.
How often are you guys finding the call on the flop though with king queen?
You should always.
Wait. Yeah, if you have
a
backdoor.
Back
yeah. Guapo.
Guapo's never played deep.
We need to get a game where Guapo's not allowed to fold and to see what happens.
Yeah, that sounds painful.
I think he's just like accustomed to playing pretty shallow. What it comes down to? Because like, yeah, if SPR is like two here, you can't. Check call.
I mean,
you also won't face half pot. So it's kind of a function of those things. But yeah, like obviously Kings continues in some sort of capacity. Oh wait, I need to lock our range for the B40 size. Confirm. And then let's just as long as it's the same candidates, I guess it doesn't really matter that the frequency gets cut in half. Yeah, I mean, I guess you really only lose like jacks here at some frequency, and king jack suited.
6-5 also, right?
Oh yeah, and 6-5. Yeah, so we could just like up this frequency to like call it like 20%.
Yeah, now it's in there.
25%. Yeah, 6-5 gets in there now. Okay. And let's see. I assume his response would be to jam more often, obviously, but or at least to raise. Yeah, so he's raising 45% of the time, which clearly didn't happen. So we can lock this for, I expect like very few raises, to be quite frank, in real time. And the fact that like he had kings probably demonstrates that. So I think this is probably a pretty reasonable response. B40. Oh, I locked the wrong thing. Fuck. He does still raise a lot, but I was locking the wrong thing.
Brian, can you check on Pip? She's eating something.
Oh, yeah.
What? She's fine.
A stick or something.
He loves sticks.
Yeah.
It was so cute. She went outside and actually found a twig.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, this is like a cartoon. Like she's actually the prototypical dog in the window. I think it's the same one.
Oh.
Okay. So say
collecting it.
Say he continues through a call and then we do see the King of Diamonds River. I don't know what to expect here. I thought jam in real time was good, but I could just be blatantly wrong. Okay. So it's three sizing here, which I'm never going to do. I think we just eliminate.
Yeah, you could just
eliminate quarter. I would probably just bet 40 or. No.
You could combine the two.
Wouldn't you quarter or shove?
Yeah. I forgot it was only for a pot. So yeah, we could just be all in or block.
Yeah.
6-5 is a pure check. So I missed it with the candidate. But.
So you're just like
I'm just too low on the widest hand to shove for value. 7-6 shoves. That's basically what it boils down to.
Okay, so I wasn't crazy when I said, "Are you bluffing or?"
You check jammed, right?
No, I just shoved.
Oh, this is gonna feel so good.
What?
Yeah. Project me, daddy.
I was a pip too wide. Now to be fair. If he's not pure folding ace king on the turn, I assume that this becomes good, shoving 6-5. And I don't know what his response would be with like ace king and a diamond. Maybe he folds, maybe he doesn't. But in any event, like I don't want to make any assumptions. It is clear though that we jam like two pair plus.
Uh-huh.
So 8-7 definitely gets
nines.
In there. Nines, I think, is a bluff.
Yeah.
Which makes some sense.
Most pure
10-9 suited. Maybe it's not a bluff though. Yeah, it's a bluff. It's near Trust zero me, EV. Right? Yeah, it's near zero EV. Where 10-9 suited is winning piles.
Wow, look how much that's winning.
10-9 suited is just winning infinite. And this, I think this is just the difference between blocking tens and not. So much of his calling range is going to be 10x of diamonds. Sorry. This is only 10-9 of diamonds. That's why.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That would make no wonder.
Diamonds is going to make a lot.
Yeah. And like king 10 is making a ton. That makes sense. Like no one pair is really going to make a lot of money. Like Jax is making money. But that's it's very suit dependent, obviously.
That feels like a thin jam.
Yes. I think this is like what we're targeting. And that's really what this comes down to is if he never calls queens or jacks with a diamond, then my shove is a torch.
Yeah.
But if he calls like one pair hands, okay, yeah, so queens mixes all candidates. And jacks is a pure fold because I imagine that's where a lot of our bluffs come from. But ace 10 is a call. So, you know, whatever. If he finds a call with either of those... then I think we're doing okay. But yeah, it's a tricky spot, right? Yeah. Like, it's difficult to get called by... Oh, this is the big one, is aces with also a diamond, that? Pure calls. Well, with a diamond, it's going to pure call. Because I, like, basically have no flushes then.
Yeah.
And in-game, I got nit-rolled, where he tanked forever.
What?
before calling with top set. It's like, what the fuck were you calling the turn for if you were going to fold on a king? And he's like, I'm so worried about ace five of diamonds. I'm like,
it's one hand.
That hand? Like,
it doesn't exist.
Why are you worried about 10-9 of diamonds?
Five of diamonds is on the flop.
I mean, it might have been, these suits might just been mixed. Ones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, it's just like, well, what about 10-9 of diamonds? What about like 7-8 of diamonds? Or whatever the fuck it could have been. Yeah. One of these was a diamond, obviously. But there's more pair plus flush draws. So he's saying that, and in my head, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh my God, he has like ace 10 with a diamond or something like that. I'm like, this is fucking great. I'm a genius.
Yep.
Fucking genius.
When it takes that long, you're like, oh, I'm definitely good.
1 minute, 7 minutes later.
7 minutes later.
This fucking nit rolled me. God fucking damn it. It's upset. God damn it. Fuck.
I should have just left then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's like a nit rolled like that. Yeah.
The queen eight is going to make a great short.
No.
We appreciate your services.
No. It's bad. It's bad. All right. I feel a little bit better about this, I guess. I think my instincts were good. My execution was maybe bad.
Yeah.
But again, it's like what we talked about yesterday, the difference between a mistake and what did we say? It was mistake and a frequency.
Frequency versus pure. Right?
Yeah, wait. How quickly we forget.
I know.
It was, so
it was
good
pure
too.
Mistake versus frequency mistake.
Frequency error.
Right? Error. Pure error.
Yeah.
Pure versus.
It was.
What?
Yeah. Right? Pure was definitely in there.
Inaccuracy.
Inaccuracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. We need you.
I just found the graphic too. Yes. It's a mistake versus inaccuracy. By the way, we should put that in our fucking memory bank because it's a really great way of framing things. I was very inaccurate in this one.
Yeah.
If you guys have your own version of In the Muck, please feel free to submit to us. It's the pinned comment in our Solve for Why, Only Friends Twitter. That's onlyfriends_pod. You can join our Discord community there. We have an entire forum dedicated to In the Muck and would love to examine some of your spots. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Guapa got the graphic up there briefly. And then finally, we have two academies coming up at the end of May. Cash Academy, May 23rd to May 25th. That one is nearly full. If you guys are interested, be sure to sign up solve4y.io. We also have an MTT Academy, and we even have a commercial for it. So if you guys are interested in that, ignore the link at the bottom. They got it wrong. It's academy.solve4y.io. Be sure to head there and get more information. Sign up if you are going to be in town. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow for the final show of the week. And then we have three shows next week. I'll be out of town Thursday and Friday. As I mentioned, heading to Milwaukee. I'll be at the Potawatomi. God damn it. I did so good. Potawatomi. So casino May 2nd noon for a meetup game with Jamin and Jamie Kerstetter. Be sure to come join us. We'll be playing all kinds of fun stuff, maybe some double board bomb pots. We'll see. That's gonna do it. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Peace.
Peace.